Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to the Driven Woman Entrepreneur Podcast. And happy National Email Week, which just so happens to be the topic of today's guest interview. Now, if you are a coach, a consultant, a small service business owner, or an independent professional, you have heard this advice over and over and over. You got to have an email list. You got to keep it growing month after month. It's an asset you own. And even memorize slogans like, the money's in the list, without even really wanting to. But this mass marketed advice is really best suited for course creators, people who actually need a huge ass list that has to be pumped up every month with a big Facebook ads budget and summits and affiliates, because these people are depending on a 2% conversion rate and a huge number of unsubscribes the minute they get their freebie. They're getting themselves off the list. So what about people like us, the experts, advisors, and service providers? Well, your personal tech fairy, Bev Feldman, is here to the rescue, and she's going to answer your most burning email questions like, how big a list do I need? How long should my emails be? How often should I send them? What about open rates? And her advice is going to surprise you, including the fact that even though Bev is a certified ConvertKit specialist, she does not recommend ConvertKit for everyone. In fact, she doesn't even think everyone needs a list. Mwah! So, if you are ready to uncomplicate the email dilemma and create a simple, strategic, sustainable solution, then you're going to want to listen to every word of this episode. Let's hit it. So, Bev, I want to get this straight. There is so much mass marketed cookie cutter advice out there in the internet about how to do email marketing right. But from what I see, most of it does not apply to genuine experts. Most of it seems to apply to people who want to grow a huge ass list, run Facebook ads, get a 2% conversion rate, and maybe sell their course. So how do we do it differently? Because I know this is not what I need and probably not what most people listening to this episode need either.
Yes, I 100% agree with you on that. It's certainly not what I need as a consultant. So I've been in the online business space now for so many years that I feel like I've had to unlearn all these years of learning of, you know, grow that email list, get as many people on your list as possible, causes the least amount of friction as possible to get people onto your list. And I don't think that applies, like you said, to most of us. What we really need is a list of people who are engaged, meaning they're opening our email list, they are clicking on those links, they are replying to us. And you don't need a huge list in order for most of us to have a thriving, successful business. I know for myself as a consultant doing one-on-one work, if I had, you know, thousands of people at a 1% conversion rate, that would actually not be it would be very stressful for me. It'd be too many people. But the way really most of us need to focus on our email marketing is showing up consistently so we can build these relationships through that content that shows up in people's inboxes. And for me, I really look at email marketing as not just growing this giant list, but really about how am I building that connection as people come onto my list. And some of it might be automated. I always recommend people have some sort of, you know, what people call a welcome sequence, so that, you know, whatever you have going on in your life, you know that when people come onto your list, that they are getting a feel for you as a business owner, what you do, and if it's a mutually good fit. Because honestly, that's the other piece of this, is letting people know, am I the right person to help you with what you need support on? And if they unsubscribe because it's not a good fit or it's not a good time, I always look at that as a good thing, quite honestly. So my biggest takeaway for everyone in regards to this, for people listening, is that you don't need to have a giant list. What you want is a list of people, of the right people. I'd rather you have a small and mighty list of people who resonate with what you have to say and what your offers are, than a giant list of people who don't care about what you have to offer.
I think it comes down to, like, on social media, for example, everybody wants to get that blue check mark, but vanity metrics don't pay your bills. I work with coaches, consultants, service providers, small businesses, and independent professionals. They do not need thousands of people. They wouldn't be able to serve them with the work that they do. But let's talk numbers, because I don't even know what a small list is versus a large list. So if we're talking to consultants, not course creators, talking to consultants and coaches and independent professionals, if they have 200 people on their list, 500 people on their list, 20 people on their list, like, what kind of ballpark are we talking about, Bev?
Honestly, any of those numbers you just threw out at me could be great. And I mean, it depends on how many people you work with, what your capacity is, how you're serving people. And I will make a note that, and this isn't something that I take credit for having come up with, is that if you run something like a group program, you might need a bigger list. But for those of us who really focus on one-to-one work, as long as you're bringing in the right people, potentially 50 people could be all that you need. It's quite possible. I don't feel like there's a hard and fast rule. It really depends on what your capacity as a business owner, how engaged those people on your email list are. So if you have 50 people and every week you've got 90% open rates, which would be phenomenal, mm-hmm. that's great. I know I can do this math. What, that's 45 people opening your emails every week.
We're going to do the basic math. We're not going to do the in-depth math. Okay. So I don't want anybody to bounce off this recording right now. But so if you could have 50 people, you could have 100 people, you could have 200 people, but we're talking about engagement, and let's go a few levels down on engagement. So the first level of engagement is, are they opening the email? Now we're going to talk about different email platforms in a few minutes, but on any platform, you should be able to see whether they opened it or not. So let's say you have an email list of, let's say you have 200 people and you have a 40% open rate, meaning 40% of those 200 people every week are opening your email. Is that good, average, better than average? If they just open it, and we're going to go into other levels of engagement next.
Yeah, I mean, partially depends on what industry you're in, but typically that would be a really good open rate overall. I do want to caveat, though, the thing with open rates while mm-hmm. we're talking about it
yes.
is that open rates are going to be your least reliable metric when you're looking at your email marketing. As people may or may not know, Apple did a massive update to iOS a couple of years ago, which throws off that number. So it may artificially inflate what your open rates are, what they look like. So I do think open rate is an important thing to look at, but I also think it's actually more important to look at kind of in comparison. So looking from, you know, to look at, say, a month's worth of emails, looking at those open rates in comparison to one another. And if you notice one that's got a much higher open rate or one that's much lower compared to other open rates versus just looking at open rates on its own, you need a little bit more context to get an accurate view of that metric.
And by the way, just as an aside here, sidebar folks, when someone answers a question with "it depends," you know that you are talking to a legitimate expert, because otherwise if they say, oh, a 40% open rate is fantastic and that's what you should go for, okay, you are listening and taking advice and possibly making business decisions based on a copy of 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 someone's advice for someone who's not anything like you running a business that's nothing like yours. So I really appreciate that it depends, because it does. And even we're not going to fixate on one particular metric, because someone may be thinking, I'm doing so great. I may only have 20 people, but I have an 87% open rate. What else you got? So the next level of engagement would be, there's different ways they can reply to your email, but they might send you a DM on one of your favorite social platforms instead of replying to the email, right?
Oh, absolutely. And here's where I think, again, kind of that mass marketed copy of a copy of a copy messaging that we're hearing is, you're not going to necessarily be able to track that within your email marketing platform. So like if you send an email and someone replies to you via DM, you kind of on your own have to set up that system that lets you know that people engaged with that email. Mm. So, but I love that you brought up that point, because that the point of email, because we're talking about building relationships, as long as that relationship is continuing somewhere, it doesn't have to happen in your inbox. It could happen on a phone conversation. It could happen via social media. But as long as you are seeing that people are comment, you know, telling you, oh, I'm on your email list, or you can see that your email, that they are on your email list and that conversation is happening, that's how I feel like you know it's a great way to gauge if your email marketing is moving the needle forward on your business.
I appreciate that you're saying that, Bev, because I used to get frustrated and confused by this. Like, I'm emailing every week. I have a what I think is a good open rate. But oftentimes when they do respond or engage with the content of that email, they're doing so somewhere other than hitting reply. So it's everybody has all these tools, and we're trying to use all these tools. And the whole point of this conversation today is how to use the tool, the strategy of your email marketing as an expert in a way that's simple, sustainable, and strategic. But if you expect that they're going to automatically hit reply and engage with you in their inbox, that may not be what they do. They may read the email and think, oh, this is so good. Maybe there's a link to your most recent blog post or a podcast episode or YouTube video or TikTok or whatever. And they may later go look at that thing and then respond to you from that platform. But they never would have known about that thing had you not emailed them. So it gets a little trickier. And I know we're going to talk a lot about automation. This is a big area of your expertise, is email automation, because otherwise you're literally running all over the place trying to collect this data and figure out what's working and what isn't. So the more automation, the better. I'm all for that.
Yes, I agree. And so, of course, you know, like I said, unfortunately, not everything can be automated, but there's a lot that you can automate. And because we were talking about metrics, you know, we talked about the replies, which may or may not happen via email. And depending on your email marketing software, that information may or may not be tracked in a way that you can really see that data. You might have to kind of take a little extra step on your own, but it's still, you know, because we're talking about people with smaller email lists anyway, chances are you're going to be engaging with people on your email list in a very different way from someone who needs the very large email list and doesn't have the relationship building with the people on their list. And that's not a judgment to people who have that business model. It's just the reality of having a very, very large email list.
I don't think I've heard anyone say this before, Bev, in quite this way. But what's really coming through loud and clear is sometimes it comes down to, do you want a big list or do you want to have relationships with people? Is it more transactional or more relational, what you do and the way that you do it? I think that distinction will be really, really helpful for people to figure out, because some people just want to sell a bunch of stuff to people that they don't know and they're never going to know and they don't want to know. And they're serving them through that information, but they don't actually want a relationship with them. And other people would hate that business model.
Yeah. And I've had that business model and I didn't like it. The only thing I liked about that business model was when people replied to my automated emails and I was having a conversation with them. And I was like, oh, this is why I'm doing this. That's the fulfilling part of it. And going back to what you're just saying, that kind of, you know, more hands-off approach, I think a lot of times that's what we're taught to do. And if that works for you as a business owner, great. But I think for a lot of us, that's not why we went into business. I didn't go into this business to be as hands-off from my clients as possible. I love that piece of it. I like having the human interaction. And that is why I have a consulting business.
But remember, it depends. We're going to do a lot of it depends in this conversation. I know that automation is important because it takes the lift out of the repetitive things that we know we need to do, but they're time consuming, they're a little bit tedious, they're necessary, but you might not see the ROI right away. So I know that automation is an important part of this, but if what we're going for is relationship building, help me understand, like, what role does automation play? Because what a lot of people will say is, well, you can either be automated and hands off, or you can be high touch and have a relationship. I know that you know a way to do both. Let's talk about that.
I'll go back to what I talked about before, having to give a very concrete example, having that automated welcome sequence. If you had to individually welcome everyone every single time they came onto your email list, that would use up a lot of your time, most likely, and it wouldn't be the best use of your time per se. That being said, you still want people to feel welcomed, and there are ways to do it that feel in alignment to how you want to be showing up. So I'm not one to say, well, you have to do it this way or that way. I'm saying you should do it in a way that feels good to you. I do recommend having some automated emails as people come onto your list, just so you know that relationship building is kind of happening for you. But those are your words, hopefully, that you're putting into those emails. So even if you aren't the one to hit send right as someone comes there, your personality, how you show up in your business will start to come through in those words. So, and the other part is, you know, the automation piece, like being automated versus building relationships is, you know, we talked about getting replies on emails, inviting people to reply to the emails. And you can, from that, you know, if you know you don't necessarily check your inbox every day, I have an autoresponder for my inbox. So if someone emails me, and I have it set, I think, so it goes off like once a week. So every time someone emails me, they don't keep getting that autoresponder. Yeah. But it's giving them, you know, it's saying, oh, hey, I'm, you know, thank you for your email about XYZ. Want to let you know that when you can expect to hear from me. I also share a little bit in that, like make it a little bit more personalized. And I've had people reply to my autoresponder to tell me they loved my autoresponder.
I like that.
So, yeah. So I think you can also inject a little bit of personality into that. So you're setting the expectations that you're not living in your inbox, but you value people's time and giving them that expectation of when they can expect to hear back from you. And the other piece of that is, if you know that people email you with certain questions, you can put some of that information also in your autoresponder. So for example, I will have people email me periodically to say, hey, I would love to chat with you about ConvertKit help. How can I do that? My autoresponder has a link to book a call with me. Mm-hmm. So I have, on a couple of occasions, have noticed people got that autoresponder and then booked the call from it. They're like, oh, I see. Here's the information I needed. You gave it to me. Mm-hmm. And that was automated. So they got what they needed. We built that relationship and I was able to save some time as well on the back end.
I love that. You know, we all hear about trends and there's a lot of conflicting information out there, right? So I'm curious what your thoughts are about, you'll read a blog post that says, email is dead. It is so dead. It is deader than a doornail. And then you'll scroll further down in your feed and say, there's never been a better time to focus on email. It's like, oh my gosh. So you've been doing this for a while and you are, you know, a consultant for one of the best and most highly respected of the email service providers, ConvertKit. Like, you're watching these trends. And I want to talk specifically in a minute about like, what is the right kind of email strategy for your individual business model? But email, like big picture overall, 2023, is it dead? Is it not dead? Is it just getting started? I bet you're going to say it depends. So tell me what you're going to say after that.
Well, no, I actually don't think it depends. I think as much as people want to say, oh, email is dead, it's not. I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but I people check their email all the time. We rely on email to have conversations. So email's not going anywhere anytime soon. Versus, you know, there are certain social media trends that have come and gone. Well, I never got into it, but Clubhouse, I think, is the example that I see people using a lot. You know, I don't think places like Instagram, Facebook, they're not going anywhere anytime soon. However, you are at the mercy of the algorithm. So even if someone chooses to follow you, they might not see your content. Versus if someone signs up for your inbox, while you don't have 100% control over them actually opening the email, and you know, there are cases where you could end up in their spam or those hidden folders if you have people using Gmail, at least you know that you are going to show up in their inbox and people are going to check their email. That even for people who don't check it every day, most people are going to check their email, I say, at least a few times a week. So I don't, it's all to say email is not dead. It's not going anywhere anytime soon. And this is information you own versus your Instagram followers. You don't own that. Facebook could decide to shut down your account. So 100% email all the way.
Yeah, they just had over $1 billion fine applied by the EU today to Meta for privacy policies. So yeah, that could factor into things. But I think a lot of people have a love-hate relationship with their email. Like, it's kind of like,
I do.
I hate, well, what is that? I forget what commercial it was. I hate it, but I use it kind of thing. And I think when we are in our inboxes and there's a lot of spam and there's a lot of, you know, potentially bad news, uncomfortable news, but then we see that email from someone we've chosen to follow, if it's worth opening, we're going to open it. And I think it's one of the things that my clients in particular, and even myself, struggle with is, you know, what is good content? What is a good reason to be in their inbox? And are you putting the same stuff in the email that you're putting on social media or elsewhere? Like, what makes it different when it's email? And I think when I see it done well, it's something that I'm not necessarily going to find somewhere else. It feels more personal to me. And usually I only have to do one thing. I used to write an email newsletter. Had so many different things. You could do this, you could do that. You could go here, you could go there. And I realized, oh my God, that feels like so much work. Even I don't want to click on any of those things. So now it's like, here's one thing you could look at. And oh, by the way, here's a related thing. If you like that, you're probably going to like this too. And then I want to get out of there because I just think about how I respond to emails that are too long or too wordy or too complicated, or give me too many choices. I don't think anybody's got the bandwidth for that anymore.
I agree. I think the days, I will say again, it depends. I think there are some business models where that would make sense. I think the majority of us, though, likely do not and probably should not be doing newsletter-style emails. And by that, I mean, you know, kind of like a, you know, the summary of a magazine. Oh, here's 7 articles you can click on. I think keeping it about focus on one specific thing with one call to action. Now, that's not to say you might not have instances where you do share more information, more calls to action. And I do think overall it can be beneficial to kind of change things up a little bit, have a, you know, a really short email 1 week, a longer one another week, sometimes encouraging people have the call to action be for people to reply to your email versus encouraging them to click somewhere else. I do think kind of varying it up a little bit. So people kind of keep people almost to keep people more engaged, because not to say, oh, what's going to show up in my inbox today, but mostly to see, you know, for people to say, oh, okay. I know I tend to be pretty wordy, for people to say, oh, Bev didn't send me a really long email today. It was more of a conversation piece.
And then they might reply and say, are you okay? You're usually really wordy, but that was short. Are you all right? I do think varying it, and I need to get better at this myself. I do think varying it makes sense, because if you just put that within the framework of everybody's busy, everybody's stretched, everybody's got too much going on, they have a limited amount of bandwidth and attention. But if you can hook their curiosity by varying things, they're more likely to read it and engage with it. I want to go back to something we've kind of circled around a couple of times, and I want to make sure that we really address this, because I know it's important. You mentioned a couple times about fitting your email strategy to your business model, and we've kind of already debunked the huge ass list, Facebook ads, like millions of subscribers, 1% conversion rate. We're not selling courses here primarily, even if you have a course. If you are primarily a consultant, a coach, a service provider, an independent professional, you've got hundreds, maybe, rather than thousands. But what would be the right email strategy for that type of business? And is it possible some business models don't even need an email list? Hey, it's Diane. You know, something I hear all the time from regular listeners to the podcast is, oh my God, Diane, I learned so much from listening. It's really helped me so much in my business and life. I just can't even imagine what it would be like to actually work with you. And you know, I just kept thinking about that. You can't imagine what it would be like to actually work with me. That's a problem I need to solve. So I decided to give you a backstage pass. Here's how it's going to work. I created a private podcast. It's absolutely free of charge, And you can listen to it in the very same place that you're listening to me now, but it's private. So the way you get access to it is you're going to click on the link in the show notes. You'll enter your email address in the form and it will be sent to you. There are 10 minisodes. Each of them is a backstage pass into an actual coaching conversation that I have with one of my one-on-one coaching clients. Now, you're only going to hear my voice because privacy and confidentiality are important to me, but you're going to hear what the specific challenge or problem my client was facing and the feedback, advice, or mindset shift that I offered them. In the show notes, you're also going to get key points and takeaways because, as you know, if you're simply listening, nothing changes. It's when you apply what you learn that things begin to pop. So I hope you'll sign up for it. I hope you'll binge right through it. And I especially hope you'll let me know what you think. The link is in the show notes. Go grab it.
So to answer that last question, correct. There are some business owners that really don't need an email list. I have a local business friend who has such a thriving business. She has built up such an incredible referral network that I have told her, not that she's asked for my advice, but I'm just like, you don't need an email list. It's because she knows it. She's almost over capacity and it wouldn't make sense for her to then take her time to start an email list. So if you are fully at capacity and you know people are constantly referring you clients and that pipeline is not going to go away anytime soon, I would actually say that you don't need to focus at all on an email list. That would not be the best use of your time. For other people, and again, it depends. I think, you know, if you only need, and I'm not going to, you know, take credit for sharing this, being Michelle Mazur was talking about this in a group that we're in, you know, if you just need a couple clients a year because what you offer is so high touch, then maybe it's something you show up in their inbox quarterly and focus more of your energy on other networking events, other relationship building activities. Mm-hmm. I do recommend generally though, for people who you might not necessarily have such a large pipeline of clients, like you need more people or you don't have quite enough people coming towards you, that you do want to show up somewhat consistently. So for me, I typically show up weekly. Mm-hmm. I'd say I would not go less than monthly, just because you also run the risk if you show up too infrequently that people might forget who you are mm-hmm. and why you're on their list. I've certainly had times of people where I don't quite remember signing up for their email list. And I'm like, well, I haven't heard from you in half a year and I don't really understand anymore what it is you offer. So I'm actually going to unsubscribe, which is, you know, unfortunate. And again, I don't think there's anything bad about having people unsubscribe from your list, but you don't want people to also forget who you are. And because then you run the risk of too many people unsubscribing because they're not used to hearing from you. You also run the risk if you go the route of emailing too many times in a week, a day, that you will also get people unsubscribing. So it's about finding that balance that you're showing up consistently enough that people are remembering who you are without burning yourself out also at the same time. Email can be one of those things where you're like, oh, I just don't want to do it. And it kind of gets pushed by the wayside. So I do encourage you to try to show up consistently so that you can build those relationships, but in a way that feels good to you. And both the consistency of it, you know, the cadence of how frequently you're showing up, but also with the words. I mean, I don't consider myself for my own email per se, like the best salesperson via email. Mm-hmm. But I also know that people have told me they enjoyed reading my emails. So that encourages me to keep showing up and to build those relationships with people.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think most of my clients don't feel like they love writing emails. They also don't feel like they love receiving emails. But if they like receiving your emails, they open them consistently. Even if they don't respond, I mean, would you ever recommend, I'm thinking right off the top of my head now, would you ever recommend doing like a little experiment where maybe you change the day or you go from weekly to maybe every other week and then see if anybody notices? Or because I see people, that I don't like reading this, but when someone has missed a few weeks and then they roll back into your inbox with a big old apology, I'm like, don't do that. First of all, nobody's sitting by their inbox waiting for your email, no matter how big a fan they are. They probably didn't notice. Or if they did, they just thought, well, she must be busy. She's back now. Like, don't, wouldn't you agree? Like, you don't need to apologize. There's nothing to apologize for.
Yeah, I agree. I would just not apologize. I recently actually had someone whose email list I'm on, who typically does show up weekly. And I was like, oh, am I no longer on this person's email list? And then their email showed up the other day and they mentioned something going on in their life, not in an apologetic way,
but just so
I was like, oh, that's probably why they haven't been showing up in my inbox. And I really appreciated that. It was a little bit of a kind of a reminder of what they've got going on without being like, so sorry. Like, I don't think we need to apologize. We all have lives and things happen. That's also not to say you shouldn't feel like you can't share what's going on in your life if that feels right for you and the type of business you have. But I don't think you need to apologize.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah. And you're right. It's a different value alignment. Some people like to share a lot of personal information. Some people, that is just verboten. It's not who they are. They don't like that. They don't want to do it. And they don't attract people who expect that either. Can we talk about platforms? Because there's so many of them and everybody's got their favorites. And a lot of the mass marketed cookie cutter copy of a copy of a copy advice is like, you have to do this one, but you have lots of options, don't you?
Yes. And I will even say that as a ConvertKit consultant, I would not recommend ConvertKit to everyone. And I have friends, depending on what their business is, I've said, don't get ConvertKit. You will want to use this other email software instead. So the other piece to that is, you know, when people are like, oh, should I switch? Because I think it can get so easy to get wrapped up in like, oh, well, people are talking about this platform and this platform. Should I switch? The way I look at it is, if your email marketing software that you're currently on, if it's working for you, just stick with it. You don't need to massively, you know, do the work of having to switch everything over. However, if what you're currently using is not working for you, either you don't find it intuitive, you don't like being on it, it doesn't work with whatever else you're using to run your business, then that would be a good indication that you might want to switch. And I'll say, if you haven't yet set up a platform, if you're not sure yet what you're going to be doing and you're looking into it, I think it's really easy to get hung up on the price tag piece of it. And yes, you want to factor in what it's going to cost you, but I actually would not look at the cost as a way of comparing platforms, because some have really great free options for up to like 1,000 subscribers, which is amazing. At the same time, you might run into some limitations later on. So I really feel that you should look at the platforms that are going to work with what your business is right now and what you need it to work with. And also look at it itself. I've had people who have come to me because they really liked the really pretty email marketing software, and they're like, this is not the right fit for me. Or other people who are like, this other platform is not remotely intuitive. So I do recommend taking a look at it and making sure it's something that you feel like you'll be okay being in.
That makes a lot of sense, Bev, because I think all of us have different brains. I work with a lot of people who are neurodivergent, and I am neurodivergent. And I have signed up for things in the past because some coach I was working with or consultant or group program I was in just told everybody in the program, this is the one and this is what you're all going to do, which was more for her convenience and comfort than for ours. But almost everybody offers a free trial, 7 days, or you know, if you give them your credit card, you can cancel within 7 days. And that's long enough to kind of play around in it and see, is it intuitive? How does it feel? Do you like the look of the interface? I remember one of my clients knew she had bought the wrong program because she thought it was fugly. And she said, every time I open the thing up, it's like the colors were garish. It was not organized in a way that made the least bit of sense to me. I couldn't figure out what I was doing right and what I was doing. I'm like, that is a hard no. I don't care how many people recommended it. You have to be able to go in and feel like, it would be like if you were looking for a house or an apartment. If you walk in and you instantly get the feeling like, oh my God, this is, get out. Like, you don't need to make it work. And I think especially a lot of creative problem solvers, which tend to be a lot of my clients, they think, well, I just need to give this more time. I just need to spend more time getting to know this. No, you don't. Like, it shouldn't be that hard, especially when you consider it something that you really are going to want to like well enough to do regularly. If it looks ugly, if it looks complicated, if it looks confusing, if it just anything about it is like gives you the ick, pass. There's so many options and you don't need to make this harder for yourself than it may already feel like it is. But on the hard factor, is it really that awful to migrate? Because I know that's something that keeps a lot of people in a program that they, a platform that they don't actually like that probably isn't really serving them. Because a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, it's kind of like changing your phone plan. You just, I don't know if you can keep that number, sister. It's like, is it really that hard?
So again, it depends. It's so funny. I feel like later on I'll have to have a bingo sheet or something. This is like, oh, fine all the times. Bev says it depends. The reason why it depends is you have to look at what you currently have set up. If you have a lot of really complex automations already set up in your current software, then yes, it's going to be more complicated. Yeah. If it's integrated with other pieces of software, yes, it's going to be more complicated. If you just have kind of your subscribers hanging out there and you've just been sending out weekly emails, or maybe you have a simple welcome sequence and that's all you've got going on, it will be a lot simpler. Part of it also depends on how quickly you figure out new tech software. And that varies so much from person to person.
No, that's absolutely true. And you're anticipating one of my last couple of questions is, there's a lot of options. You need to find the one that works for your brain, your team, if you have help, and for your business model. But shoot, I forgot the question I was just going to ask you. Huh, that's the first time that's happened on an interview. Okay, come back to me. Come back to me. I am drawing a total blank.
Oh, gosh. I hate when that happens.
Oh, no. Oh, it usually happens, but it hasn't happened in a podcast interview before. So if you can migrate to a new platform, and it's maybe not that hard. I remember the question. Okay. And I'm not,
there you go.
And I'm not cutting this out either, because what you see is what you get with me. If you decide you want to change, do you need to hire help for that? Which leads to the bigger question. The question I actually forgot is, how do you know when is the right time to hire help? Whether it's someone like you or an assistant or whatever, how do you know when you might actually need more than just DIYing it or handing it off to your virtual assistant if you have one?
So there are people who can just do straight migrations. In fact, if you're migrating to ConvertKit and you have over a certain number of subscribers, they will do it for you for free.
Okay.
The difference, however, is someone like me who does both the consulting and the strategy side of things, I will help you migrate things over, but also you might get the assistance of people telling you to do things or making suggestions for things that you didn't even know were possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know people like me, whether, you know, I'm focused on ConvertKit, I know people who know all, you know, various other platforms as well. We know these email marketing softwares so well that we're going to be able to make suggestions for you that you didn't even know were possible that can theoretically help you to better automate things while also creating more opportunities for sales and booking calls or learning, you know, finding data that you didn't even know you could find in there. So I think that's part of it, is that if you feel like it's simple enough, I can move it over, great, you should do it. Maybe down the line, you want someone to teach you something about it so you can learn a little bit more, or have them check to make sure that you'd set it up the way you meant to. So I think that's part of it, is, you know, looking at the complexity of what you already have set up. Do you need both the implementation and the strategy of it? A lot of people come to me, for example, because they are in a phase of growth with their business. They're going to have increased visibility, and they know not only do they need to make sure that things are working streamlined, that they've got everything set up correctly, they want to make sure that they have some additional things set up that will help them to automate things with their business so that their business can grow with them.
So that would be one example of somebody. I'm hearing kind of two examples. One would be if you don't just want the implementation, but you want the strategy. And you definitely tickled my ears with, if I were to give this to an assistant, even a rock star assistant, they're going to do what I ask them to do. Someone like you, who's a strategist, is going to like hear between the questions, and you're going to say, well, do you want this? Do you want that? Are you aware that you can do this? Do you see your business going in the direction where something like this would be helpful? That's like future forecasting and helping you recognize some platforms may be better than others for things that maybe you're not doing in your business right now, but 6 months from now, a year from now, you're going to be so glad you chose this platform rather than the other, because you know what questions to ask, which again is the other mark of an expert. So if someone is going to be growing their business, let's say they're going from one-on-one to group, or they start adding a whole other level of service or bigger ticket contracts and packages and stuff, that would be one example of when to hire a strategist. When would be another time that might be a good fit for hiring?
Well, another time would be for someone who's currently on a platform. So it's not just for people looking to switch. I also help people a lot who are already on it and know that they're not using it as well as they could be. They are people that, you know, I've tried doing this thing and every time I do it, it never seems to work. Or, yeah, like I can do what I want it to do, but I know there's more I could be doing and I don't even know how to begin to do that. So that's the other piece, is helping people to understand who already use it, how to use it even better.
Yeah. When they realize they don't know what they don't know and it's not a good use of their time to try to figure it out. Okay. Bonus round, last question, because I know we both need to move on, is why ConvertKit? Like you could have become a consultant. I mean, you're the personal tech fairy. You could have been a consultant for any of the companies, for multiple companies. Why did you personally decide ConvertKit is where you're going to focus?
I love that question, because part of it is I can give an answer that it was not the right decision when I first switched to it. So I like it now because I've decided to focus on it because I've just been using it for so long. I think at this point I've been using it for 7 years. So that is why I focused on it. When I started this business, I thought maybe I'll learn other ones. And I've decided, you know, I'm just going to stick with ConvertKit. And I like ConvertKit for a few reasons. I like that it integrates really seamlessly with a lot of other platforms people are using. Feel like it's pretty intuitive versus some of the more ActiveCampaign is super, super robust. And as a result, it's less intuitive, for example. So there may be instances where I would recommend something like ActiveCampaign over ConvertKit. But for most consultants, they probably don't need something quite that robust. And they're going to, in my opinion, learn ConvertKit a lot simpler, or a lot faster, because it's simpler. It's more intuitive, in my opinion. I also like that the company itself is actually pretty transparent. And they've made some choices in the past that they got a lot of pushback on. They were supposed to go through a major rebranding a number of years ago, and people pointed out to them their new business name that they were going to switch to was actually cultural appropriation. It was, I think, a Sanskrit word they were going to use. And instead of pushing back and just saying, well, we've already invested all this time and money into our rebrand, we're just, you know, we're going to keep going for it. Instead, they said they listened to people and owned up to the mistake they made and continued on with the name. So I'm sure they lost a fair amount of money. I don't know specifically. So to me, that's been a signal that they hold true to their values. And it's not to say that, you know, like any company, I'm sure, you know, they've done things that I might not 100% agree with, but that moment really stuck out to me because I don't think you always see businesses doing that. A lot of times, and this was like, this was a number of years ago that they did that too. That was another piece, is like the platform itself, I think, is great. And I also like the values that their business stands behind.
This is the perfect place to wrap up this episode for so many reasons, because as a small business owner, as a consultant, a coach, a service provider, an independent professional, someone's choice to work with you, to follow you, to subscribe to your email, to listen to your podcast, often comes down to your personal values and whether they align with them, because no matter what you do or how brilliant you are, people have choices. And increasingly, I see our culture moving in the direction of people making buying decisions, relationship decisions, to do business with people and businesses where there's a values alignment. And I am here for it, because at the end of the day, we have to make choices anyway. And that's a more reliable way to make choices instead of what's the cheapest, what did my friend get, what do the gurus say? Like, if you can go to bed at night saying, I feel good about giving my money to these people because of what they stand for. Like, that's a win all the way around for me. How do people find you online, and where are your preferred social platforms for them to connect with you beyond this interview, Bev?
We can connect on either Instagram. You can find me at your.personaltechfairy. I'm also, I like talking to people on LinkedIn, and I don't know the direct URL off the top of my head, but yeah, we'll make sure the links are there. And you can also find me on my website at yourpersonaltechfairy.com.
And maybe you just want to get on her email list and see what her emails look like.
Yeah. And even though I'm talking about email marketing tech, I've been told my emails are fun to read. So
that's the first thing I'm going to do as soon as we hang up. I'm getting on that list. Thank you, Bev. This was a lot of fun and a lot of valuable and helpful information.
I'm so glad. Thank you.